man zijn derde Belgische fronttitel. Met die prachtige nieuwe helm.
You're listening to the Cyclocross podcast by The Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA. RAFA exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories and vibrant clubhouses across the globe.
Hello and welcome to this inaugural episode of the Cyclocross podcast presented by Mudita. My name's Daniel Freeba. I'm going to be your host today. And joining me are two illustrious names in the world of cyclocross. And I'm actually going to ask them to introduce themselves because I think that'll be novel for the cycling podcast. We don't usually do that. And I also want to know how a Hungarian becomes a top-class cyclocross photographer. So we'll go first to Balint Hamvas. Would you like to introduce yourself, Balint?
Hey, I'm Balint. Cyclocross, as generally in cycling, is quite small in Hungary. And my only memory of cyclocross was, before I kind of knew much about cyclocross, was people riding on an empty football field. And that was the national championships, and it never really looked much. I used to do mountain bike photography. And one year I was like, I should really check out what this cyclocross thing is about. So I drove up to Dabord, which is the closest big race for me at the time. I was still living in Hungary. And that was the first ever cyclocross race. That was back in 2008 that I've ever seen. And I loved it. It was just brilliant. It was so intense. I was absolutely hooked straight away. And then a couple of months later, I moved to London and suddenly going to cross races became a lot easier.
That well-known hotbed of cyclocross, London.
Yes, but just popping over the channel became a lot easier. And so I went to a couple of cross races in Europe. I think that was my first World Championships in 2009 in Hoogerheide, which is an amazing experience. And I was like, I want to do this more. And then I started to cover for myself, and then the first clients came, and now this is what I do full time.
Wow. And I never thought I would encounter a passionate cyclocross fan from Hungary. Anyway, Renat Schotter, you're someone who should need no introduction in the world of cyclocross, and you're Belgian. That is enough to explain why you love cyclocross, but who are you? Explain to the listeners.
Well, I'm still Renat Schotter, and I'm specialized in covering cyclocross amongst others. And I've been doing this since like 2000 on a more than regular basis. But of course, my very first cyclocross experience goes back way further than that. It must have been somewhere in my late teens, end of the 80s, where I visited the now disappeared Super Prestige race in Zellebeke near Ypres, well known from First World War, and I think that kind of sums it up. The trenches of World War One, and then you hop on a bike and you have a race. So I think you can compare it a little bit with that. And of course, being Belgian, cyclocross is huge. It's kind of a religion. I've been involved in it with Sporza, and I'm very grateful to be front row reporting on the biggest races for almost two decades now. So I'm quite amazed by that figure, I must say.
And we're here today mainly, Renat, to talk about the World Championships. How many World Championships have you done?
I should count them, to be honest. But my first World Championships on site actually were in the the World Championships won by Adrie van der Poel near France. So that was somewhere mid-90s. But that was for another station back then called Supersport, and it was a pay TV station from Filmnet. And then I had to wait a considerable amount of time. My second worlds were, I must think very deeply about that actually. I think 2000 or so must have been my first worlds then on site for, back then, VRT and nowadays Sporza, yeah.
And Renard, we know that the World Championships in road cycling, it's a very kind of special and particular week in the calendar of road cycling, in the sense that, you know, everyone is on site for a week, and it's this big sort of melting pot of everyone from road cycling, and of course you've got all the different discipline, you've got under 23 racing, women's racing, and so forth. I mean, to someone who's not been to the Cyclocross World Championships, how different is that week and that weekend from a regular, you know, top level cyclocross race?
But it's different and not different. The week, the build up is a bit the same, but the week is shorter because there's not so many events. So usually starts on Thursday with the first race trainings, race course trainings, and then that continues for a couple of days, and then on Saturday you have like the packed weekend starting. And if we go back in history, then the Worlds that will be in my memory forever, or the Worlds 2013 and back in Louisville in the United States, where because of conditions we had to move, they had to move all the Sunday races to this Saturday, so we had like this super Saturday, and that was an amazing experience to cover like back then four World Championships in one day. I kind of hope that sometime that will happen again, but it probably won't unless they invent some more categories.
Do you guys, I mean, looking, you talk about the bad weather there in Louisville. I mean, is that something you relish if you are working on a race, covering cyclocross, covering a race like the Worlds? If, for example, in Valkenburg, there was to be a snowstorm or torrential rain, I mean, would you relish that as journalists covering the race? And I suppose some riders would also relish it, and some riders would absolutely hate it.
No, frankly, yes, I would, because if conditions are extreme, then it pumps me up extra. I vividly remember that long Louisville day. That was an amazing day, unforgettable day, and it gives you extra adrenaline that, you know, you have to pull up something to make a decent coverage. So I wouldn't mind if there was would be a snowstorm, but the peculiar thing about Valkenburg will be that it is now an end of the season race. It started as an end of the season race actually, but it wasn't World Cup back in the days. But so it's the first time that we have a really big race in Valkenburg, end of the season, and I'm very curious to see what's going to happen. And if it's with bad weather, well, you just take it into account. And then when I go to a race like that, in my suitcase, I have every solution for every kind of weather type. So I shouldn't be surprised if whatever weather happens.
And looking ahead to Valkenburg, Berlin, I saw you last at the Skeldercross race just before Christmas, was it? Yeah, it was just before Christmas. Just before that very intense period of racing that happens every year over Christmas. And the sort of lie of the land then was very much that people were very much focused on the rivalry between Mathieu van der Poel and Wout van Aert, who van der Poel's really dominated the season, but van Aert is certainly the guy who has been coming closest to him. Give us a quick update on a quick summary of the last few weeks and how the sort of balance of power has evolved, if it has at all.
It was interesting because right after that race, there was the World Cup race next day in Namur. And that was the first time when Wout managed to beat Mathieu by a very big margin. And we were kind of hoping, I think, that maybe this is the start of a Wout's resurgence, and he will now be able to beat or at least be on par with Mathieu more regularly, which hasn't really been the case. So he's still, you know, there or thereabouts, sometimes a bit further back, sometimes very close to Mathieu. But I don't think he has just yet found the antidote to Mathieu's legs, to be honest.
I mean, Renard, you had high hopes for precisely that happening. You thought that weekend would maybe be a bit of a watershed in, you know, in the men's racing, that Wout would take a lot of confidence, particularly from that race in the Skeldercross race. It was very, very close. And it doesn't look as though it's quite been the case. Would you agree with that?
But he stepped up his game a little bit, but not enough just to match the outstanding performances of Mathieu van der Poel. Then again, sometimes comparisons are a bit short. Like, for instance, the day after Belgian and Dutch nationals, there was this race in Belgium here. It's called the Autogem race, and Mathieu was really outstanding again. But he had a very different after race session than Wout, who was kind of obliged to go to the after party in his hometown and stuff like that. So I think on the day in Valkenburg, it will be a different ball game because it's just one day. And on the day, we've seen it for the past two seasons. Actually, Van Aert has won it twice against the odds. So he's perfectly capable to win it again for the third time in a row against the odds. So anything's possible, really. As for that tension you were asking me about, yeah, it's a fact. Mathieu has been outstanding, but we've seen it in the past. Sven Nys has pulled off seasons like Mathieu van der Poel is realizing right now, and then he lost it again and again and again at Worlds. So never say never.
Well, I think you said there that it is only one day, and he only has to, you know, he has to be at his best for 1 hour on that particular day in Valkenburg. We're going to hear now from Niels Albert, who of course is an illustrious former rider himself. World champion, was he a world champion?
Yes,
twice. He was a world champion. And Paul Hegers, who is also Hegers, have I pronounced that correctly?
Hegers.
And I think you're forgetting the R, but there's no bother. Okay. Everybody understands that you're talking about Paul Hegers, the illustrious world champion of Coxeter 94.
There you go. So we're going to hear from both of those two ex-world champions now about, well, on their vision, their view of what Wout needs to do to finally topple Mathieu van der Poel in Valkenburg.
He just only needs the right condition. Mathieu is the whole season really strong, and you have to win on the Worlds, so we can go to the Worlds with no pressure and try to beat him. But for the moment, Mathieu is really strong, and we do everything about it to beat him that one day. So hopefully it will come on the right moment, and after the nationals of today, the only thing that's really important is in Valkenburg between 3 and 4 in the afternoon, and that's the only thing that counts after today. I think when Wout has the same shape like in Namur, I think he can beat Mathieu, and we can see a nice race, and hopefully it is so that the both guys have a good day, and that we can see a nice battle between the two biggest racers of the moment. So hopefully Wout and Mathieu have both a good day.
One people is there, Mathieu van der Poel, and he is very special. And I think it's a problem for the Belgians men. It's 1 hour in a year, and it's not 40 times. It's only one time you must a perfect race drive, and that's it.
Whoever you are, whatever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world.
So interesting to hear from those two guys, Albert and Hegers. Better this time, or not? They seem to suggest that Wout is the guy for the big occasion, and that he might be able to pull something out on this particular day. We think, based on what I've heard, the course will suit the two guys equally. It's not a course that's particularly, you know, more suited to Mathieu's abilities or Wout's. But you know, this idea of the kind of rising to the occasion and the pressure of the occasion, it just strikes me, you know, from my novice's perspective, that it must have become pretty depressing for Wout to be beaten time and time again by Mathieu over the course of the season. And somewhere along the line, you would think that his confidence has suffered, and that might be a handicap for him in Valkenburg.
I think that's true, but at the same time, he has maybe a little less to lose. He has won the last two World Championship titles. It's much it was really, really, really shaken last year when he lost in Luxembourg. And so I think he has a, if better or worse, a chip on his shoulder, and he really wants to win this one. So I think Wout can go there and do his best. And if he doesn't win, you know, he tried, but he's still, you know, a two-time world champion. That's something that he can rely on or think about when he lines up for the race on the day.
Renaud?
I think, like I said, it's a one-day race. Anything's possible. And Wout, I don't think he's getting depressed by all the defeats he's having against Mathieu, because I think he very well understands that Mathieu is an outstanding talent, and we will see lots of him in the future in mountain biking, and I guess at some stage also on the road. So I think he's kind of feeling privileged that he's battling against him, and he's giving a good game here. I mean, if he loses, okay, usually most of the times it's clear, but we've had races, we had real duels, and I think on the day anything's possible. Then the mental game will also start again. That's also typical for worlds. We will have psychological warfare, we will have intimidation with words and quotes and tire choices and stuff like that. So there will be a lot of fuss towards that worlds, especially since we have worlds in Holland now, and it will be the side of Wout van Aert will be pumped up, and they will say it's the enemy's hole you're going to ride and stuff like that. But there will be a lot of Belgians, so there will be a huge build-up like we usually have towards Wout. So I think the mental game also plays a part, and I think Wout actually is a little bit stronger there on that level than Mathieu. Don't get me wrong, I mean, Mathieu is extremely strong, but I think on the mental side of psychological warfare, Wout van Aert is just that little bit stronger than the Dutch guy.
Is it also true to say, Renaud, that, you know, I know how focused and how interested and passionate the Belgian media is about cyclocross, that in the phony war before the race, you know, in... as you say, what they through their comments in press conferences and so forth, the whatever Wout says almost carries more weight and resonates more simply because there's more Belgian media that's covering this and giving it and you know is very interested.
Yeah, that's so true. But the fact is that, like I said before, that Mathieu is actually more Belgian than Dutch, so he's consuming the Flemish and the Belgian media, so in that way he might be disadvantaged. But I think the media right now are they kind of play 50-50. It's not that there's this undertone of giving Van Aert the edge, but everybody respects Mathieu 200%. So I think it'll be played in very small things, and the biggest danger for Mathieu is that his dad says something like last year, and then put some oil on the fire, and that's where it can become dangerous for the Van der Poel side, and it can get out of hand. We've seen that in the past with quotes we had from Lars Boom back in the days. There was this Worlds in Hogerheide. Lars Boom said something, and then he got the Belgians united against him, which was quite rare at Worlds, and Nils Albert actually, so Wout van Aert's current team leader, could profit from that position. So you never know if something like that happens. And then, if you ask me, my thoughts are going 1,000 directions. I think Van der Haar is a real threat for both of them, because if he manages to get away very soon, I'm quite sure that Van Aert will say, it's not my turn to chase. And what will Van der Poel do then? If Van der Haar, his fellow countryman, is in the lead, can he chase? He can't, because then they will talk a scandal about him. So that will be a very interesting
fact to see what Van der Haar is doing in the early stages of the race, because he's pulled it off in the past. He's won there twice. It's his race course. I think that is the big question of that Valkenburg Worlds. Okay, we'll go in with a duel. Van Aert, Van der Poel it will be, but the third dog could win it well and easy.
And would that be, Renard, in that case with Van der Haar, is that simply because, you know, they are both Belgian and it's the World Championships, they're both riding for Belgium, or is there also a connection, a friendship between Van Aert and Van der Haar, which dictates that, you know, Van Aert will pull out all the stops to help his friend in that situation?
Well, actually, I think Van der Poel and Van der Haar get along really well. So if Van der Haar is gone, then Van der Poel will do the same like Van Aert. He will look at the Belgian and say, look, it's your turn to ride. It's my teammate. I won't chase him. But then that might well be a huge advantage for Lars Van der Haar on the day. So I don't think Van der Haar and Van Aert are that close. I think Van der Haar and Van der Poel, they understand each other very well, and that might be the big opportunity for Lars van der Haar, because of the main favorite role of Van der Poel, he might be the huge, he might be the main benefiter. He might get the main benefits from that situation.
Lars, don't forget that Lars van der Haar was one of the very few who beat both of these guys, and that happened in Ronzek quite early in the season. But that course is very, very difficult and very, very hard, and not entirely dissimilar from the course in Valkenburg. So he's won there twice. He beat these guys once. Kind of a similar thing happened, I think. He kind of went away early on and the other two probably didn't take it really seriously, and then he just stayed away for the rest of the race. So if he has the legs on the day, then yeah, it's definitely a possibility.
And just on the mental side, let's just hear quickly from another guy you spoke to at the weekend, Berlin, a journalist who covers cyclocross regularly, Nico Dick, Belgian journalist, who we hear here talking about, particularly Wout van Aert's mental approach to the Worlds in Valkenburg.
What does someone who can focus very, very good to a special occasion? So the Worlds is, of course, the most special occasion of the year. So I think he's always better than any other race. So in normal circumstances, Mathieu is the best of the two for the moment. But that's it's a one day race. It's a special occasion, and I think he can surprise. He's also very good in mental things. So I'm sure together with his mental coach Rudy Heeren, he will work towards it, and yeah, that's the main difference, the biggest difference, I guess, for him to beat him. He has a little bit less pressure because of that. He already won two worlds. Yeah, the other thing is that He knows that that Mathieu is better, so if he loses, everybody will say, "Oh, it's normal." So that's another thing in Mathieu's head. Mathieu knows I am the best, so I should win. I have to win, and that's the thing that has a little bit less pressure. Yeah.
So Renard, we heard then Nico talking about Wout's mental coach. Is that going to make any difference? Is, you know, the work he's been doing with his mental coach? Have you seen any tangible improvement in his riding?
Yeah, for sure. I think Wout has improved his mental game over the years, and he's a guy that never cracks. Also, if he's 25 seconds behind, then he will still ride like that. He can get to the lead of the race easily, so he never gives up, and he's actually quite right to do so, because a flat tire, a crash, especially on a technical course like Valkenburg, where we have a very, very demanding off camber, so anything's really possible. Even if you have half a minute in early stages of the race, then it's not over yet. Unless they will pull off a tactical game with Van der Haar being gone, then it's a different ball game. But I think Van Aert is, in his mind, is really strong. We saw it at Belgian Nationals as well. He was really getting a hard time by Lauren Zwick, who for about three-fourths of the race was able to put pressure on Wout and even lead at a certain point with some perspective to win the race. But Van Aert never gave a real crack. He was a bit annoyed, a bit hampered maybe, sort of, but he never really panicked. So he was always in control, and he waited for the moment, and when the moment was there, then he took it really convincingly. So the same might happen on the day and at Worlds, of course.
Like many things in sport, and particularly cycle sport, the French can lay claim to having invented cyclocross, partly as a pursuit to help riders stay fit in the winter. The first French national championships were held in 1902, and although the sport quickly caught on across the traditional cycling nations, it wasn't until 1950 that the UCI first organised the world championships. The first world champion in 1950 was Frenchman Jean Robic, who'd won the Tour de France 3 years earlier, and the French dominated the early years, winning the first nine titles. André Dufraisse won from 1954 to 1958 and became the first five-time winner, and he was later joined by Italy's Renato Longo, who won his fifth title in 1967, and then Albert Zweifel of Switzerland, whose five wins spanned from 1976 to 1986. But the king of cyclocross is seven-time winner Eric de Vlaeminck, the older brother of Monsieur Paris-Roubaix Roger. Eric died a couple of years ago, aged 70, but since his first title in 1966, the Belgians have dominated, winning 29 out of 52 world titles. Eric de Vlaeminck was not as good on the road as his brother, but he was no slouch, and there have been a number of riders who have crossed over. Pascal Richard was a world champion cyclocross rider, as well as an Olympic road race champion. And in recent years, the likes of Lars Boom and Zdeněk Stybar have both been world cyclocross champions. Stybar won in 2010, 11 and 14. Dutchman Adrie van der Poel won the Tour of Flanders, Liège-Bastogne-Liège and Amstel Gold in the 1980s and turned his hand seriously to cyclocross in his later years, winning the world title just once in 1996. His son, of course, is Mathieu, already world champion in 2015 and the favourite to win on home soil this week. It took the UCI 50 years to add a women's race to the cyclocross weekend, and the first rainbow jersey was won by Germany's Hanke Kupfernagel in 2000. That was the first of her four world titles, but it is Marianne Vos of the Netherlands who has dominated since 2006, and she's won the title seven times. Although Sanne Kant, the Belgian, the reigning world champion, and the winner of this year's World Cup Series will be the rider to beat this weekend.
So you heard there from Lionel Burney giving us a bit of cyclocross history, a bit of cyclocross world championship history. Renat and Belint are going to be joined by Lionel. Lionel has promised that I hope he's booked his ticket for Valkenburg already. He's going to be there for the whole weekend. And, you know, we're going to move on to the women now. We're going to discuss the women's race. Of course, this cyclocross podcast is brought to you in association with Mudita, which is a project which has been launched by Nikki Brammeyer. It's also the name of her team, but there are other things, various other things that fall under the umbrella of Mudita, including sort of clinics for aspiring cyclocross riders and this podcast. But Nikki will be one of the contenders in Valkenburg. I know it's certainly the focus of her season. But chaps, you know, based on what I saw at Skeldercross and based on what I've seen since then, Sanne Kant, the Belgian rider, the defending world champion, is very much the hot favourite, is she not?
I think this is the first, well, not the first time, but this year there were so many very strong performances by all the, well, by the top 10 women that I think there are like 9 or 10 riders who won a big race at some point in the season. So while I would say that probably still Sanne Kant is the biggest favourite, but by a very, very small margin. There's so many other names that you can mention who has a real chance to win the race that I would be a bit wary to.
Go on then, Berlin. Name some, because I'm looking at the world rankings here, and you know, you guys have been telling me, you guys told me before Christmas that the gap wasn't that big. Sanne Kant is not dominating the sport in the same way that Mathieu van der Poel is, but there's a big old gap on the UCI rankings for, between Sanakan and the rest, the chasers, who are very closely packed together, from Caitlin Keogh's, Catherine Compton, and Eva Lechner, so forth and so forth.
Well, if you look at the top 10, apart from a few names, all of them won big races. So maybe Caitlin Keogh hasn't, but she's been consistently top three at big races. Casey Compton had an amazing season. She was the first, well, she is the first non-Belgian woman who won the one of the big series, the DWV Verzekeringen Trophy, which is a big feat. Helen just won the nationals, the British nationals. Catherine Anash still, you know, wins races. So Maud Kapteins had an amazing start to the season. She won some really, really big races. Maybe not the Koppenberg this year, but she won really, really big races early in the season. So Lucinda Brand, who's now the Dutch champion, last year he was fourth. So there's so many big names who can win. And don't forget about Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, who again just getting better and better, and by the time we get to the World Championships, her position at the starting grid will be much better than a few weeks ago in Essen, in her first race where she started from the very back.
Yeah, well, actually, I would put my money on her, on Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, because she's very ambitious. She's become world French champion again. She's completely back. She made a terrific comeback when she won in her first weekend already in Overijs. And I think she will be a little bit fresher. I don't know if you say that exactly like that, but she will be her season is shorter than Sanne's season, and I think that might make a big difference on the day. We've seen it in the past, the one day race is a particular preparation, and I think Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, having raced not as often as Sanne Kant, has a small edge there. But like Balan said, there's many competitors. I mean, I think these are the worlds with the best field in depth that we'd have ever seen at Women's Worlds, so it's really nice to talk about the Women's Worlds in that perspective, I think.
Do you get the sense with Ferrand-Prévot, Renard, that, you know, she perhaps hasn't had the road career, or she the start of her road career hasn't perhaps been what some people expected it to be? She was, she was very dominant at sort of junior levels, and maybe she sees cyclocross as an area, a discipline in which she can sort of taste and rediscover some of that dominance that she perhaps thought that she was going to enjoy on the road, and maybe others did as well.
But I'm not sure. I just don't know what her plans are on the road. So maybe being together with Absalon, the French mountain bike legend, has driven her completely towards off-road races. So a combination of cyclocross and mountain bike might be her goal. But I think for her personally, the most important thing was to get back where she once was, and she's done it now at cyclocross. And I'm kind of quite sure that if she manages to do that in cyclocross, that she will start thinking about the road as well. Because once you're good at something you did before, then you think, oh, maybe I will be good at the other stuff also again. So I think she can. She still has every option in her career because she's still young. She did that triple world's crown in mountain bike, cyclocross, and road racing at a very young age. I think she still has a lot of future ahead of her.
And Renard, you know Sanne Kant, I imagine, pretty well. I mean, talk to us a little bit about her character, and also talk to us about what maybe her weakness could be. Because to me, I saw her and spoke to her briefly a few weeks ago at Scaled Across, and she seemed to me someone who, you know, was very much in control, and she had this kind of poise about her and this confidence about her, which is maybe natural, you know, in a season in which she has been the best rider in the world. But, you know, she struck me as someone who was pretty unflappable. But what kind of personality is she?
Well, she's a bit vulnerable on the mental side of the game. But at the other hand, she's got a lot of stamina, she's got a lot of character. She's really somebody that never gives up. So I think having won her first Worlds last year, that was a huge step for her mentally. And she will be, mentally, she will be stronger because of that first World title. But at the other hand, we've seen even in her shirt as a world champion that she still has her weaknesses. So I just hope for her that it doesn't happen on the day in Valkenburg, because it's a very, very demanding course. It's not really her course. She's never won it, so that's on the downside. Lechner has won it. Talita de Jong has won it, but she's not well riding right now. Katie Compton has won it. Maybe it can be Compton's game. She's won it. She's in good shape. We saw it at the U.S. Nationals, and it would be a nice ending of her career. Not that I think she's going to quit, but she's becoming of age, kind of, and I think she deserves to become world champion one day. If you look at her career, her amazing career. So
you say Renat, it doesn't really necessarily suit Sanna that well. I mean, how would you guys both know pretty much this course? I mean, as I understand it, it's pretty much the same course as the World Cup race in Valkenburg, maybe with a couple of tweaks. But how would you kind of describe this course?
Well, apparently it will be quite different from the World Cup because of logistical reasons, but the character of the course will be preserved, and the off-camber will still be there. And so there will be a lot of climbing involved. I think you can compare it. I'm not sure, of course, until I've seen it 100%, but I think it's a slightly easier race course than Namur is. So that puts it into perspective. It is a climbing cyclocross with lots of ups and downs and some technical descents, but it's not as steep and certainly not as tough as the Namur World Cup race. So it's somewhere in between, I'd say. Yeah, Ballant will maybe disagree, but it's in between Ronse and Namur, as if you ask me.
Yeah, it's probably a good. I think the tricky thing is it's a bit of an unknown quantity, because the previous three or four editions that were World Cup races there, they were all held in back in October, I think, or maybe very early November or late September. So like early season races, the weather has always been nice, or at least not too bad. I don't remember like really bad weather at Valkenburg. However, now it's the end of January and everything is soggy and muddy. So I think that will change. That would change. Even an unchanged course would be probably quite different from the usual Valkenburg that we're used to. So that's definitely something that will cause some surprise.
One rider who I think enjoys the Valkenburg course is our own, so to speak, Nikki Brammeyer. So let's hear from her about how the last few weeks have gone and how she's feeling just ahead of the World Championships.
Well, over Christmas it went pretty good. Obviously, with getting second at the Moor, that was pretty good. And then it was quite stressful, through Christmas, just because trying to get all the Canyon bikes sorted out and racing, and it was kind of day off, day on for quite a while. And then came out of that block pretty good, I think it was like 2nd or 3rd of January, came down with like some virus or sickness, and I've been trying to shake that off the last week or so, really. It's only just started to go, so it's kind of been a bit up and down.
And you know, just with the new bike and that, how much adjustment have you had to do, or not much at all?
Delivered till I think like the 28th of December, so it was a bit of a rush trying to set them all up. And then once I raced on them at Barle, I realised that the frame was actually too small, so then it was a bit hectic trying to get all new bikes kind of sorted out between Barle and then the National Championships. But since I've been using them, like, I feel quite comfortable on the bike and I feel like it's riding quite well now. So obviously it's always a bit hectic with changing equipment mid-season, but I think I'm used to the bikes now.
And when I spoke to you a few weeks ago, obviously you got some experience of riding at Valkenburg, and I know the course is a bit different for the Worlds, but you seem fairly comfortable with what kind of course it was going to be. I know you've been there the last couple of days. Any sort of change to what you think about the course and your chances, really?
Well, I always knew it was going to be like a hard course, and I kind of expected a few of the banks and stuff to be kind of similar to what I've ridden before. They've actually changed quite a bit of the course, like some of the sections are kind of backwards from what they usually are. There's quite a bit more of like a steep kick towards the finish and like a long run up. And I didn't actually think it could get any harder, the course, but it actually has. but that's a good thing. I really like it. It's a good course, and it's going to be a really, really tough racing on there. And I think once it gets like ridden more, it's going to cut up quite a lot, and it'll make it quite a technical race. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And if you were able to choose the weather conditions on the day itself, what would you prefer?
I'd prefer it to be pissing down with rain.
Can't say that.
It'd be good if it was raining, because I just think it'd make it like a really slippy course, and I'm not really a fan of when the courses turn really like sticky tacky mud, because then there's a lot more running involved. But when it's fun kind of slippy racing and you can actually kind of keep pedaling all around the corners and there's not too much running, then I think it'll suit me.
The week of the Worlds itself, Nikki, I mean, it's the same length, it's the same type of race as you do sort of every week over the winter. But how different is your approach to that week, and how different is the week itself? Or is it just another week but a bit more important than all the other races?
I think in one way you kind of have to just to think of it as another race, because, you know, you're racing against these women all the time, and it is just another cross race at the end of the day. But the paper for races during the season, just because it's that many of them, you can't really afford to keep backing off into every race. So for sure, now as from today, like, I'll start a taper period where I'll obviously cut my training hours down quite dramatically, just try and sharpen up for next week, make sure I'm resting good, eating good, sleeping good, like keeping the basics kind of in the background. And then hopefully I'm the freshest I will have been the whole season come next Saturday.
Just thinking about your rivals or other riders who are going to be dangerous in the Worlds, you're thinking about that course, who else is it going to suit?
I think it would definitely suit the mountain bikers. You know, it's super, super heavy. There's a lot of climbing every lap. And I think for sure the mountain bike, like a lot of off-camber sections as well. So I think you'll see the likes of like Pauline Prevost up there. And you've got Caitlin Keogh, and, you know, there's Yolanda Neff, people like that who probably might spring in like a bit of a surprise. And I think it's a bit rare that this year there's probably 10 to 15 riders that could possibly get on the World Championships podium. Yeah, I think it will be an interesting race, and for sure an exciting one.
Would you be happy? Would you sign now for a medal, or do you want to win it?
For sure, my goal at Worlds is always to win the World Championships. You know, that's what you dream of. But if I could get a podium, that would also be equally amazing. So I'll do everything I can just to have a good, strong race. And I think whatever the result is, it'll be. And yeah, I want to produce my best performance there for sure.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport. Fueled by science.
Renat, Nikki's chances in Valkenburg, how do you rate them?
Oh, difficult. I think a little bit too much climbing for her, but I think medaling is possible anyway, and a lot will depend on race details. The form of the day, of course, will be important for majority of competitors, and I think on that race course, and like Balan said, I think the weather will be completely different from the early World Cup conditions we've experienced there over the years. So it'll be an unknown factor for majority of competitors, and I think Nicky has done a very decent season up until now, but that big win hasn't come out yet. And who knows, on the day, it is a one-day race, anything's possible. We've seen it in the past, especially at Women's Worlds. We've had surprises over the years. It would be a nice thing, of course, just to have a UK rider win the elite women's category would be huge and might change the ball game significantly, which would be nice.
And talking about UK riders, Renard, am I correct in thinking that Tom Pidcock is a very hot favourite for the under 23 race?
Tom Pidcock is a huge talent. I think he's the main favourite. Even with Belgian guy Eli Iserbit, interesting prodigy, lining up against him. I think Pidcock is the favourite in his category. Also, if there's some climbing involved, then I think it suits him. Yeah, it advantages him with the competition in mind. I want to flash back to the women's race. I think Helen Wyman has actually at least the same chance as Nikki Brammeier. And we shouldn't forget that Helen has won on the Koppenberg a couple of times. And I think climbing race, you shouldn't rule her out. You never know. If she has the race of her life, she might become world champion because of the climbing involved in the race course.
How much are you looking forward to it, chaps? I mean, you know, what kind of atmosphere, what kind of crowds do you expect to see in Valkenburg? Is it going to be a good Worlds?
It's going to be close to Belgium, so there's going to be lots of Belgians, which is always good for the atmosphere. I'm looking forward to see how they solve the conundrum of the start area, which the last time there was a race in 2016, they moved the start area to a big car park, but only one side was accessible to the spectators, and that was obviously not preferable for the World Championships. As far as I know, they're gonna change that. And they also had problems with the environmental agencies because they let the first kind of section of the course through a protected area, and so spectators are not allowed in there. It's a beautiful forest. So for us photographers, it was accessible and it was really pretty, but it's completely empty. So I'm really looking forward to see what the final layout is. Is that kind of forest bit going to be part of the final course layout? But I think it should be a really good race.
And Renard, how does a Belgian feel about going into the Netherlands generally? We'll start off with the most important matter. You know, Belgian beer is fantastic. It's world renowned. It's world famous. And there's so much variety, and you know, and it's so good. And just all you have to do is hop over the border, and all you find is really bog standard, mundane tasting pilsner. That's as far as I can see, anyway.
But the average Belgian would say that they don't have beer in Holland, but I don't want to insult my Dutch friends. I don't think the beer will be that decisive, though that it plays a role alongside the course.
It has to play a role in cyclocross, surely.
Yes, but I don't think it will make any difference if you get thrown at with Belgian or Dutch beer. I mean, it's disgusting anyway. So I think it's Belgium-Holland, and Belgium-Holland, if it's for cyclocross or in football, Belgium-Holland is a classic. Belgium-Holland is rivalry. Belgium-Holland is like, I don't know how you Brits would call it, England-Scotland kind
Scotland,
of.
Scotland, yeah.
Yeah, so it has this mythical era of being a duel of the past, and if you think back of classic soccer games, the Belgium-Holland games in Antwerp are legendary with 70,000 people and stuff like that in a stadium that couldn't even hold that amount of people. And in cyclocross it's a bit the same, and also the media always play a role into that. But I think it's less of a theme this year, because in my opinion, I've said it before, Mathieu van der Poel
is claiming Mathieu, aren't you? You're claiming him.
I'm not claiming him, not at all. I'm just stating facts. I mean, he's if they say that he's a Dutch champion, yeah, that's true, but he lives in Belgium. He's not living in Belgium because of of taxis and stuff like that. No, he's just being born here and he's being raised here. And that's a different story than what people want to make out of that. So that's the reason I state that he's more of a local guy than a Dutch guy. But anyway, the Belgium, we're getting out of Dutch now. The Belgium-Holland factor always plays a significant role at Worlds because the crowds are getting into that game with yeah, it is war. Whatever you want to call it, I know that the people then will start booing. It's not a big amount of the audience, but it can play a side on the mental game of riders. It has happened before. Lars Boom has been in that situation, like I stated. So you just hope that it doesn't play a role on the day, but it will, because probably the audiences will be about 50-50. 50% Dutch people, 50% Belgian people, and if the Belgians decide to come big masses, then the Dutch will be outnumbered. So that is also part of the game. So I think the beer will be present and the amount of noise will be present, and then it's a matter of coping with those conditions and keeping your head cool and try to concentrate on the race as a rider.
Well, Belgium is definitely going to win the beer war, but I've got a feeling that Mathieu van der Poel might come out on top in the race. Chaps, I unfortunately am not going to be in Valkenburg, but I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of my colleague Lionel Burney. And but I look forward to hearing from you guys from Valkenburg. And in the meantime, I'm going to thank you for your time and wish you a good evening. Thank you, Belint.
Thank you.
And thank you, Renat.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you.